Government Code 54956.9B, one case, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation, Government Code Section 54956.9A, and the name of the case is the Teachers Association of West Covina et al. Versus West Covina Unified School District, LASC, case number BS128579. And the final item in closed session will be conference with labor negotiators, employee organization, California School Employees Association, Chapter 91, employee organization, Teachers Association of West Covina, negotiators Lillian Lays Castillo and Mike C. And with that, we'll convene a closed session.
Okay, we'll call this meeting of the Board of Education back to order at 7:05 p.m. We've returned from closed session where we discussed expulsion of two students, public employee discipline dismissal, release and transfer appointment, conference with legal counsel concerning existing litigation, and conference with our labor negotiators. Let's see. We'll now have an invocation. Is there anyone who in the audience that wishes to offer an invocation? Seeing none, I will go ahead and offer that. And then, Mr. Shoemaker, will you lead us in the flag salute? Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we're grateful that we can gather as the West Covina Unified School District Board of Trustees and our staffs and concerned citizen, and we're grateful that we have the opportunity to be here and ask that Thou would bless this meeting, that it be a productive one that focuses on how to better serve the students of this district. In the superintendent of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Here.
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 Okay, I have two items to report out from closed session. One is it was moved by Mrs. Polis and seconded by Ms. Shoemaker and approved to expel the following pupils from the schools of West Covina Unified School District. Pupil number 181842 for violation of Code Section 48900C and 48915C3, possession and sales of a controlled substance, marijuana. And pupil number 186764, violation of Code Section 48900C, possession of controlled substance, marijuana. The pupils are expelled and will not be eligible to apply for remission until the date set and completion of the rehabilitation plans. Further, by a vote of 5-0, the board took action in closed session to direct the district and its counsel to file an appropriate response in Superior Court in the matter of TAWC versus West Covina Unified School District. I have nothing else to report. Board of Education, Ms. Paul? You have anything, Jessica? Okay, student board member report.
Next Friday is homecoming. Also this Wednesday we have a food fair. The clubs are going to be selling after school. And our practice WASC was today.
Okay. Food fair after school?
Food fair after school, yeah.
You still do them at lunch?
Oh, no, not anymore. Because they sell, like unhealthy food. Or not unhealthy, but...
food people want.
Yeah.
Okay. We're on a business session, organizational. Anybody wish to take an item off consent? Anyone wish to add one? Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll second.
Okay, it was moved by Mrs. Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Mrs. Polis to approve the agenda and consent items for the regular meeting of October 12th, 2010. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It's approved 5-0. Okay, we're on revision of board policy first reading. This comes out of our discussion, and then there are a couple additional ones. Does the board want to take them one by one, or how do you want to do them? One by one? Okay, let's start with then board policy 1312.1, complaints concerning district employees. You have the changes there in front of you. Does anyone have any comments? Anyone?
I do. With respect to
okay.
On page
Mr. Cox?
3A, where we talk about anonymous complaints and this has changed from a will not to a may, and I just wondered, how does that bear with, I know what board policy has been, but in the actual application of anonymous complaints, what has, has the board policy or the district's policy been?
Well, I have not received any anonymous complaints regarding anything in the district. I've received anonymous complaints regarding a school that is managed by a third party. And basically, the policy or the practice has been that if we get something that looks to be like something that could break any kind of a law or situation, we let the person know, and it's up to that individual to follow up on the allegation if they want to, and if they don't want to, they can throw it in the trash. In most cases, it needs to rise to a level of concern, not based on I don't like the person or saying something about the person, but basically having something to do with legal ramifications. But we haven't had, so we haven't had a practice because I have not gotten one.
I agree. It's been a while since we've gotten them. I used to get anonymous complaints. I think maybe it was since you've been here. But it was for it was obviously from a specific teacher, and it was the same teacher over and over again. And that teacher is no longer with us, in a manner of speaking. And so the anonymous complaints have ceased. I'm not comfortable with the wording on the district may investigate anonymous complaints. I just have some difficulties with it. I think that, in a lot of things that I've been reading with respect to it, anonymous complaints looked at, Board of Supervisors complaints from counties to school districts to and dealing with anonymous complaints, and it's generally speaking that it's obviously people that write anonymously are typically cowardice in nature, have some sort of disorder, they're certainly ill, twisted perversions, personality disorders, those kinds of things. So I'm really uncomfortable with giving any credence whatsoever to anonymous complaints, and I would. I'm sorry I didn't take enough time to really give you some options as to wordings as such, but we could use something like, this was an example that I'd seen that was interesting, that the district is unable to accept anonymous complaints or complaints that have not been signed or verified, and or we could simply limit the acceptance of anonymous complaints to emergency situations that threaten public health and safety in that capacity. But I don't want to give them any more credence than, an action of we received it, we looked at it. I think it, warrants a look at, and then file away.
I had, excuse me.
What are you
I'm done? Thank you.
Okay, yeah, Ms. Pulse.
I had brought an example last week, and I apologize. I didn't bring it this week at our last board meeting, and I apologize I didn't bring it this board meeting because since we discussed it, I thought these were kind of the changes that were agreed to. I know it wasn't up for a vote last week, but it was discussed for some time at our last meeting. I can bring that, and it talks about if there is an anonymous complaint, how to deal with it, and letting people know that it may be looked into, although no one's going to be able to get back or talk to them about it because it's anonymous. So how far can it go?
Right.
So, there was some specific wording that I had brought to the last meeting, and I thought this was kind of that we had agreed basically to this last week. So,
well, how about something like we have in the paragraph criticism against employee initially made to a board member, we change the line to the district may investigate anonymous complaints.
Where are you?
Take action according to administrative regulations, and in the administrative regulations we put the language Ms. Polis is talking about.
Okay. Well, that actually brings up another issue, which is You know, we used to have a practice where we reviewed administrative regulations when we did board policies. And then about how many years ago? Five, six?
Yeah,
we stopped doing that. We stopped doing that. And so as a result, you know, as we found out with a couple things, administrative regs have changed, but the board was unaware of them because they never, the board never discussed them at the board table. And so, you know, that brings up, you know, kind of your issue, because I kind of agree with Mr. Cox. I think that a lot of times people that make anonymous claims or seeking revenge, you know, are cowards. Any John Doe can, you know, write some note and then start an investigation, and it really limits the ability of whoever the complaint is against to kind of defend themselves, because they don't even know who's making the complaint or, you know, exactly what's going on, especially if it's a broad thing. So, I mean, but we don't have that language here in front of us. But I do like the emergency thing, because obviously if we received a complaint that was anonymous that said, you know, there's a bomb in locker number 11 or something, you know, we would go, it's anonymous, we're not going to look into that. You know, I don't think that's realistic. We would, because it's an emergency, you know, go ahead and look in locker number 11. Send Mike to go look in locker number 11, you know, or something. We would do something to check that out. I mean, we just wouldn't ignore it. At least I would hope not, by saying we have a board policy that says we don't do that. But that's not really a complaint against, I guess that's not a complaint against an employee. But, you know, I mean, or someone has bomb-making materials, an employee has bomb-making materials or something, we'd look into that. So I like that language, dealing with emergencies. I don't know the details on your language.
It was just that it could only go so far. And that it, you know, it may not, I can't remember exactly what it was, I have to bring it back, but it may not be looked at. But there's no way that we could delve into it because we couldn't interview the person. So it would be very limited in scope. But then if there was something, and I was thinking, like Mr. Cox had brought up, an emergency or something that someone might be afraid, a sexual harassment, they may be afraid to put their name to that. But I think someone at least should take a cursory look. The principal should at least be made aware of it to be on guard for those kind of things.
I don't know what the board would like to do at this point on that. I mean, because we don't have Cammie's language here.
It's first reading.
It's first reading. And then.
Well, I do have another issue with anonymous complaints, and that is the issue of confidentiality. Because normally complaints, when they're involved with people, there's levels of confidentiality. But anonymous complaints, you know, if we got a, if somebody made a complaint saying someone at the district office is looking at child porn, right? You know, the last thing that we should do as a board or a staff, if we're investigating it, is announce to the world that somebody at the district office is looking at child porn. Because, you know, we don't know anything about the claim. We just got an anonymous note. And so I'm trying to figure out what kind of protections we can put in with anonymous complaints that deal with the confidentiality of them.
And I agree.
Because when you're dealing with people, you know, you do have some of those built in. But with anonymous complaints, you don't have that. And you could end up destroying, you know, people start thinking, oh, what's going on at the district office? You know, even though it was just some stupid note left by somebody. So I would like to see some kind of language that deals with confidentiality of around. Does yours have that in there?
It just vaguely said it would be limit the investigation because they couldn't interview the person firsthand and there was no way they could go back. So it would really limit the scope and but it did not address the issue of if it would be disclosed in public. But we could write something to that effect that it would not be.
Yeah, because, you know, again, I agree with Mr. Cox. I think that people that complain anonymously, unless there's a very good reason, you know, for the most part are seeking revenge or cowardly or just want to hurt somebody. So I think that.
I'm glad you put the exception in there. You said in most cases. So.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes there may be a legitimate one.
I mean, there may be fear of retribution. There may be.
But, I mean, I think there's lots of different motivations.
Employment. I mean, there's some real legitimate issues to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But when then that's not involved, then it's just purely somebody who's not willing to stand up for their beliefs, doesn't want to be accountable, fundamentally a coward.
So what would the board's pleasure to pass it with one, and then will staff bring back language or we'll get Cammie's language? I don't know if it could be in the AR. I don't know.
Well, Steve had some language. I had some language. And what we've done in the past is sent in our
and you'll see how you incorporate
that.
It.
We'll see it come back.
Is that okay with everyone? On are we going to deal with 1.3.1.2.3 at the same time? The uniform complaint procedures? Because I just wanted to make one observation that applies to both of these, is that originally in this board policy it said that we review it annually, and of course we haven't been doing that.
No, 91.
And then it was changed to in here when the law is updated. You know, but I do want to point out that some of these uniform complaint, some of the things that were changed actually happened a few years ago. Some of the codes that are changed in the uniform complaint policy, you know, that are changed, you know, now that we brought it up, they actually happened a few years ago. So I don't know what mechanism we're using as a district to monitor all those kinds of things.
Usually we take our lead from CSBA, who tracks new legislation that would change existing policies.
Yeah, because there are a lot of changes based on changes in law in here, but some of those changes in law actually happened a couple years ago. And so, you know, did CSBA not send us those? Or
if they send them to us, we always change them.
Okay. So I don't know what mechanism, but somehow we have to find a better way, you know, to monitor that. That's just an observation. I mean, I don't have a problem bringing it back when there's changes in law, but 3 years after they've changed, it's a little late, I think, for us to look at it. Okay, anything else on those two? Okay, let's go to sale and disposal of books, equipment, and supplies, board policy 3270. Any questions on that one?
Is this done some way? Because it just looks like basically this, most of the stuff was just transferred out and put into administrative regulation. Is that a correct perception, or has this been, you know, the attorneys just give us recommendation to changes of this code, or is this back to the same situation as the previous one with respect to law changes? But this is law changes since 1991.
Yeah. Usually it's, you know, through CSBA, not the attorneys, that
okay.
suggest even language. So, like, even the one you're talking about, the anonymous letters, that came straight from their recommendation. So usually we take their recommendation and bring it to you.
You mean CSBA?
CSBA.
So is this, did this one come from CSBA?
Yes.
Because I know we didn't bring this up, so I was kind of surprised to see it on the agenda last Wednesday. But it does look like, and this is, I guess, my question, is that we are taking out a lot of stuff that's in the board policy and put it in the AR.
So you'd like to see it stay in the board policy?
Well, again, that gets to some of the questions about, since we aren't seeing the ARs.
Well, we can do that. We don't have a problem with bringing you the ARs.
Because, you know, to me, you know, some of this is board policy, you know, dealing with the advertisements, the public auctions. You know, those to me are board policies and don't necessarily belong in an AR.
Well,
you know, and so
AR for people to know what to do, because they usually don't look up the policy.
Right.
They look, you know, the people that manage look at the AR.
Okay.
If I may interrupt, our board policy after each item quotes the Ed Code, and so the beginning paragraph of this particular board policy says the superintendent or designees shall arrange for the sale or disposal of district personal property in accordance with board policy and the state law. So our board policy was basically quoting out the Ed Code again.
Well, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, yeah.
Well, on all the line through ones I see in Ed
Code. Yeah, the ones through, yeah, on this one.
Yeah, and so I think since the board policy clearly states we're going to follow state law, which we have to do regardless of whether or not our policy says that. It is better in administrative regulations because then it becomes the day-to-day operation of the board policy.
The first four items, though, I believe, I don't know if those are from, there's no Ed
they're
Code section on there.
They're not lined through.
Yeah, they're not lined through. But, yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on me whether or not, you know, if we're looking at the ARs at the same time that when they get changed,
that.
then that I think, you know, makes me feel more comfortable with that kind of stuff.
Let's do that. We'll just bring bring them together. That's not a problem.
Because what I don't want to have happen is, you know, we approve, we move all this stuff over, and then it changes, then it changes, and we have no idea it changed, you know, because we don't see it. So how, when was the last time we disposed of property with our board policy?
All the time. Monthly.
When did we approve that?
When do you approve disposing of it?
Yeah.
Let's see, how to explain that. What you do is you see in the requisitions any property that was bought. I'm trying to think of, I don't know. Mike, do you know the answer to that? How do they know? I don't know how you would know. All I know is that there's a system in place to follow that board policy. Ellie, you can talk about the books. How, like right now we have a bunch of obsolete books, right? And there are certain companies that will buy those
right.
obsolete books and pay us for them. And I know in finance they keep track of every month, you know, what's being sold and what comes in. Usually you see, you know, the sale of something big, like a car. But up to $2,000 or something, I don't think it comes to you.
I don't see that in here. Under the old policy.
When it comes to books, it says surplus or undistributed, obsolete instructional materials may be donated or sold at a nominal price
mm-hmm.
to organizations or individuals who will use them for educational purposes, as specified in Ed Code
6510, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then... it talks about, before that, it talks about board members attending a meeting unanimously find the value of the property is insufficient. To defray the cost of arranging a sale, the property would be donated to a charitable organization. There's a $2,500 rule.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Right. If board members attending the meeting unanimously agree that the property is worth no more than $2,500,
mm-hmm.
then we can sell it without advertising.
Mm-hmm.
When have we done that?
I don't know.
I can't think of a time we've done that.
So
I guess it goes back to how are we following the board policy
bring
now?
That here? Is that
well, this talks about how the board approves it. The board may authorize, the board may dispose of district property by any of the following methods. So it talks about the board disposing of it.
But through the policy? Or you're saying you want to see each one?
Well, I'm just saying it says the board may dispose of district property by any of the following methods. The board may advertise for bids. So I assume at some point we approved advertising for bids
yes.
if we did that. The board may authorize the sale of property by public auction. That would require some kind of action by us.
Mm-hmm.
Without advertising for bids, the board may sell. So at some point, there's some kind of contract to different agencies that we would approve.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Then there's the $2,500 rule.
Mm-hmm.
Finding the value is not sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
The surplus or undistributed obsolete material may be donated. Yeah, the mutilated. After the board has given notice to all persons who have requested such a notice, so for number 7 for surplus. And then it talks about how we deposit the money. How do we deposit the money from this?
The money comes back into, like, say, for example, you sold books, it comes back to the book account. You sell facilities, it comes back to that account. It goes right back into the account that it was bought and purchased out of. But we can get you, for example, the last so many months, what's been sold and how much it costs and what did they do with it.
And when we approved it.
And when you approved it. You approved it. I don't think we've auctioned anything off in the time I've been here.
Yeah, right? Well, yeah, I don't think we have.
That
I can remember.
I don't think we've sold anything or auctioned anything. And Ellie, you correct me if I'm wrong. The only thing I'm very aware of are as we adopted new materials and textbooks, they came with CDs and textbook and other things. And based on what we did with that, you can explain.
What happened is when we have a new adoption, students or families have the option to take the old material that they want.
To buy?
No. Given away, right? Not to buy.
Yeah.
Well.
Value often is not the case after 8 years. You know, usually the timeliness of the book has passed, and so then some of these companies will just take materials, if they're printed materials, for recycling.
And when did we approve that? So you'll let us know
mm-hmm.
when we approve that kind of stuff? Okay.
You're asking the same question that Ms. Bastin asked regarding...
I am.
Yes, you are. And it's regarding... she was concerned about things that she saw going to a company. So we went to Ray in our business... Ray Wilds in our business office, and he showed us the ledgers, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, based on monthly... things that he would sell, not he, but the district would sell. And in most of those incidents, I think it has been, as far as I remember being here, textbook, obsolete materials that go with textbooks. I have not seen us sell a car, an oven, a location, facilities, equipment that I can remember seeing. So I don't know what we would bring. The question that Ms. Bastin was asking was basically about same thing that you're asking, about whether it's an accumulation of $2,500 or individual value. What does that say?
The property is worth no more than $2,500.
So does that mean individual book, individual CD, altogether? And that was.
Well, I think it would be whatever we were selling would be worth more than $2,500.
Individually.
No, whatever the group was we were trying to sell.
So you're talking about the textbooks as a whole?
Like well, yeah, because we talk. Actually, if you look at the proposed policy, yeah, I mean, a company is not buying one book. I mean, they're buying a bunch of books or something like that. But if you look at the proposed policy in the AR, you know, surplus or undistributed obsolete instructional materials which are unusable or which cannot be distributed as specified above. You know, it talks about they're mutilated and can't be saleable and are sold to scrap at the highest obtainable price. And then by being destroyed by any economical means at least 30 days after the board has given notice to all persons. I mean, I don't know what, you know, Don or whatever did or not. I'm just trying to figure out if we've been doing this on an ongoing basis, when we did it. And then that the money is deposited in those accounts, and it's reflected when we do the budgeting. When we do the budgeting.
I had a question.
See, and if you look too on the proposed policy, any organization, agency, or institution receiving obsolete instructional materials from the district shall certify to the board that it agrees to use the materials for educational purposes.
Well, I know Reuben had a process by which he would put it in a board report, so I need to find out for you.
Okay.
I'll find out for you.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Question.
You were saying that most of the time it's been material, but I think we're going to have something new come up, thanks to Dr. Fonseca. We'll have the play equipment. So then that falls outside of the realm of the... So I guess we'll be able to test whatever our new procedure is going to be.
Well, the play equipment no longer meets guidelines of the state.
Oh, so we're not going to donate it.
So okay. We're not going to donate it.
But you can sell it for scrap, maybe.
Maybe.
We basically have a contract that talks about taking what's there out and just getting
rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. No park could use it?
It's not allowed anymore.
That is so sad.
Yeah. Mm. We've been talking about...
They're too dangerous.
They're all too dangerous.
Okay, any other questions on this one? And you'll get us that information.
Okay.
And then BP... 5141.21.
Administering medication.
Yeah. And is this something we got from CSBA this last couple weeks too?
This is a change from past where at one point anyone could administer medication, and then it over the years has gotten strict, so they recently sent this to us.
Okay.
This is their language.
So the only two they've sent us recently then are the last two. Because we initiated the complaint one.
Right.
So recently they just sent us the BP 3270 and the 5141.21. And nothing else?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
We, how often do we get it? Like maybe four times a year?
Oh, we get four times a year. So these two were in the last packet. Okay.
I don't have a question about the policy per se, just about if a child had asthma and has an inhaler, high school student or even an middle school student who can knows how to use the inhaler, they have to go to the office? They can't carry it in their backpack?
They have to go to the office. They cannot carry it in their backpack.
Really?
Is that correct?
Thank you.
Oh, if they have a doctor's order that they can carry it, they are allowed to.
Okay, because when I was, I don't know, one of the things that you read, I thought I read it where they couldn't, that they had to go to the office. And if I was having an asthma attack,
you wouldn't
I wouldn't want to have to go all the way to the office.
No, actually in the AR, it talks about that in the proposed, specifically on the second page, Cammie, in that middle sentence. If a parent or guardian has requested that his or her child be allowed to carry and self-administer, part of its asthma, they have to consent to the self-administration and then release the district and the school personnel from civil liability if they have a reaction, and then annually provide the superintendent.
They have to be in the office, though? That they could self-administer, but it looked like it could only be in the office.
Well, that's not in the AR, I don't think. The first part of it talks about that, who need emergency medication, and it mentions asthma inhalers. But then the last part talks about self-administer. So you're saying that you think this last part applies to having to go up to this first part. I'm not sure.
That was my question, because when I read it, it's like I could have read it either way. But I was thinking I would hate to be having an asthma attack and have to walk up to the office to get my inhaler. And I wanted to make sure that's not what it meant.
It says four, it says whenever possible, and then five, it talks about prior approval of the student carrying medication. So I think it's if, you know, I think obviously they would prefer it to be in there, but it talks about the prior approval to carry it. So I think they're okay to carry it following these conditions. That's how I read it.
The question is that the issue is that the district has to know that a child is carrying it.
Yeah.
That's the
issue. And then they can carry
and then they
and
can
not be liable.
Exactly.
I just wanted to make
and then they can.
Yeah, because that'd be a horrible problem to have an asthma attack and go, how far are you from the office?
Right.
You know? Okay. Anything else on this?
I move to accept for first reading.
Okay.
I'll
and we'll get those
that.
Changes and in information. Is there a second?
I'll second it. Oh, sorry.
Moved by Mr. Cox. Second by Mrs. Polis. To accept the first reading of the following board policies. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved 5-0. Information report. Item number 7.
Mr. Siemens.
Mr. Siemens.
Again, my pleasure that we're announced that we have no Williams complaints.
Okay, any questions?
That's a good thing.
Okay. And then Board of Education discussion. Anyone?
One item.
Okay, Mr. Cox.
I noticed here that apparently the Coronado High School is going to be recognized by the City Council next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered which of our two esteemed colleagues are going to be in attendance at that and take
Dr. Fonseca.
He is, huh? He's
going to
take all the
Ellie.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to let Armando go because his wife just had a baby. Although he deserves a lot of credit.
Probably wants to go. Okay. Anything else, Kimmy? You have anything? Okay. Okay, seeing nothing else, we are adjourned at 20 to 8.